I know you like that.
How long you been back?
Welcome into the Saturday Show, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this Saturday morning. I'm Jay Catch, joined as always by Michelle Bodkin, my fine co-host here on this program. And Michelle, we're going to get to a lot of sports here on today's show, but you've got an incredible, incredible jacket on this morning.
Yeah.
Like, it fits what the weather's doing outside, I got to say.
Yeah, you know what? I'm kind of, I think, giving off a Real Housewives of Salt Lake vibe.
A little bit. I have only ever seen one of their episodes, but yeah, based on what I know, it very much fits with the motif, I should say.
Yeah, yeah. A shout out to Dad for the Christmas present.
Sure.
You know, just rocking a little fake fur.
Hey, it works. It, for what the weather has been outside, got quite a bit of snow overnight. Apparently, it's like snowpocalypse is supposed to arrive later today and be a little gnarly later.
Good, since I have to be out and about
today.
That's
lovely.
Awesome.
Good times.
Great timing.
Yeah, so it's been a crazy week weather-wise. We like went like 2 months with like zero snow, and then this week it's like, you know what we're going to do?
Winter.
We're going to catch up right now.
I mean, it feels like it kind of did that last year, too,
sure.
To a certain degree.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, welcome to winter in Utah. You just never know exactly what you're going to get.
That's a very good point. Well, welcome on in, everybody. Hope you're doing great out there, wherever you might be. If you're driving around in the snow, no matter what you're doing, thanks for tuning in. We got a fun show ahead, but we're going to be joined by Randy Mueller. He is a former NFL executive, also worked in the AAF with the Salt Lake Stallions. Mm-hmm. Continuing kind of our thing we talked about last week, Michelle's got a bunch of these connections to people, but he also currently hosts the Football GM podcast for The Athletic, and I listen to it quite regularly because he's actually very, very good on that. Like
he's incredibly smart and knowledgeable. I learned a lot from him. Again, this was a thing where it's so sad that like it didn't last longer, because I think there's so much more I could have gleaned from someone like him. But you know, when you're named executive of the year,
yeah.
And just have experience, I mean, Miami Dolphins,
the
Seattle
Chargers,
Seahawks,
yeah.
Chargers, the Saints,
yep.
And winning at a high level and putting together rosters at a high level. There's no limit to what you can kind of learn about the sport of football from someone like that.
Yeah, so we're excited to have him on. We'll have him on in our next segment. We'll talk a little bit about the NFL playoffs, which begin today. Looking forward to that. But before we get to all of that, let's get to highlights of the week. So, Michelle, will you start us off?
Highlight of the week. Maybe just kind of the busy weekend.
Okay.
You know, it's sometimes like I grumble about it sometimes. Like the weather could have been, you know, considerably better to do like 5 days in a row. But, you know, I've been able to see some really great games for mm-hmm. the most part. And hopefully that continues today with the Red Rocks. They have a big meet at the Maverick Center with some of the heavyweights in gymnastics. LSU, Oklahoma, and UCLA will also be competing in this one. So if you love gymnastics, this is the meet to go to. And, you know, and then a few more basketball games and another gymnastics meet still yet to go.
Keeping Michelle rolling through the holiday weekend, no doubt.
Yeah, yeah. So we're going to be busy and in a good way, and we kind of like that.
That's what we like to hear. We got Alex Napolis. He is producing Force Behind the Glass. Alex, you had a highlight this week?
Highlight of this week for me probably is just getting over my cold. I've been
Ooh.
Battling a really, really bad cold for like the last week or so.
Okay.
And I'm finally starting to feel better. So
good.
That's my highlight, getting over the sickness.
Lloyd's been out for like 5 days, so good for you for showing up, because Lloyd's been sick. And he's just like, I'm taking time off. But nonetheless, glad you're feeling better, man.
Hey, thank you, man. Appreciate
apparently
it.
This cold, like this whatever this bug is going around, it knocks people down hard.
I was in bed for a solid 3 days straight. Just couldn't get up. But like I said, feeling better, so that's my highlight.
That's a pretty good highlight, not going to lie. Highlight of my week, honestly, was kind of a boring week in many respects, but I did get my hair cut yesterday, and it allows me to see one of my favorite people in the entire world, Chelsea, who's cut my hair for a decade now. She's just one of my favorite people to go see, so.
He loves a haircut.
Yeah. I get it pretty regularly, but it's good to catch up with her, and she's a good friend, so okay. It's always good to catch up and see what's going on in other people's lives. Let's just put it that way.
Right, right.
I feel like in our industry, we can get so insular at times, like mm-hmm. where we kind of like we're so locked in on the like what we do. It's like, oh, there's other people out there,
and they do things too.
So it's kind of fun to get outside of that. All right, so. Let's dive on in. As I mentioned, we're going to have Randy Mueller at 10:30 join us. We'll talk a little bit more about the NBA playoffs. But want to start off, let's talk about what's going on with the Utah Jazz, Michelle. David Locke pointed this out last night. I believe it was on social media. He actually might have mentioned on the broadcast as well. But the Jazz beat the Toronto Raptors last night and did so in emphatic fashion. Really impressive stuff at the Delta Center, depending on how you want to term it, because apparently the Jazz care about such things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's so weird to me that that's something that they worry about. But huge win for the Jazz. And as David Locke pointed out, the Jazz on December 21st were 10-18 on the year. It felt like the bottom was about to fall out on this team. Is they okay? Are they going to start like closing up shop, or are they going to be big time sellers at the trade deadline? Well, since that time, as he points out, they have gone 10-2. They have now evened their record at 20-20 on the season since that time, and it's been impressive. And the thing is, they've not taken advantage of necessarily beating lesser than opponents.
Mm-hmm.
They have beat the Miami Heat, the Dallas Mavericks, the Detroit Pistons are in there. Okay, great. Philadelphia 76ers, Milwaukee Bucks, Denver Nuggets, and most recently the Toronto Raptors, all of which are teams that have either championship or playoff aspirations. They're absolutely rocking and rolling right now. It's actually really crazy to see how quickly things have turned around here for the Jazz, because they've gone from being bottom tier of the lottery over here to now they're 10th in the West, Michelle. They're currently in a play-in spot in the NBA playoffs right now.
That's an interesting turn of events. Since you actually get to watch these games a little bit more than I do, what do you attribute that to? What do you think's happened here?
Well, I think the biggest thing, and it's been changes in the lineup. I gave Will Hardy major credit. He's been tinkering all season long. If you've watched these Jazz games, and anybody who's out there who's listening, you've seen this. They've moved Colin Sexton in and out of the lineup. Talen Horton-Tucker is currently on the bench. He's not even in the rotation right now after he was starting for a large chunk of this season. You also have guys like Keontae George, who was the rookie sensation. He was starting for a stretch. They put him back on the bench to be able to let him kind of come off the bench and take advantage of maybe backup and be able to attack them that way. But then moving guys like Chris Dunn into the starting lineup, and more importantly, Colin Sexton. Like,
okay.
He is just lighting it up right now. That's the thing about this is Colin Sexton's been very, very good. But the kind of the mainstay in all of this, Michelle, Lauri Markkanen. He's finally playing, because remember last year we talked about Lauri Markkanen making a run towards the NBA All-Star game.
Right.
He gets that designation. Well, he got off to a little bit of a slow start this year. Mm-hmm. And there was some thought that there were reports out there, I think Mark Stein was among them, saying that the Jazz were shopping him among others with regards to potentially trading him. Well, just put it this way. If the Jazz are going to trade Lauri Markkanen right now, you're going to be giving up a king's ransom.
Because
the way he's playing is out of this world. So I think the biggest thing is I got to give credit to Will Hardy for not just kind of saying, okay, this is who we got, throw him out there and see what we got. He's been tinkering all season long trying to find the right combination of guys. And the Jazz's rotation right now is about 10 guys, which is large by NBA mm-hmm. standards. A lot of NBA teams like to shorten it to 8 guys at the most. But I think that he has realized, you know what, we're going to play with these 10 for now. And if other guys force their way in and out of the lineup, great. But he's playing 10 guys deep, and the nice part is all of them have different skill sets that he's been taking advantage of. I think the biggest thing, there were so many people out there, and I'll add this real quick and I'll get your thought on it, is Walker Kessler.
Right.
Awesome player.
Mm-hmm.
He's been coming off the bench, I think, 90% of the games this year. And there are so many people like, well, he's a rookie of the year type guy. Why is he coming off the bench? Well, I think the thing is, he has actually been better in lineups when he has been opposite a guy like John Collins, who the Jazz brought in via a trade in the offseason. They tried playing him together. It wasn't working. So similar to what I just talked about with Colin Sexton moving in and out of the lineup, they decided, you know what, we're going to stratify this. We're going to start John Collins, and we're going to bring Walker Kessler off the bench. And it's actually keyed a huge turnaround for the Jazz. So the biggest thing, yeah, to your point, to your question, is that the tinkering with the lineups. They finally have found the rotations that they need, and 10-2 is something you cannot ignore.
No, like I said, that is a tremendous leap from where they were sitting beforehand. And I think that's interesting that it's taken so long to find like the sweet spot.
Sure.
But I guess when you're kind of working with a team that's, again, very new and different than what you had the year before, that can kind of take time, and the gelling can kind of take time. So good on them for sticking with it and finding something that works. It's going to be interesting to see if they stick with that or if they don't continue the tank thing for a top spot in the draft. It's who knows what's going to happen with that. But I think it's nice to know that, like, the roster isn't as big of a train wreck as we thought it was. It's more to deal with finding the right combination of people and getting that to work in that regard.
Well, see, and I'm still interested to see if the Jazz do the trade deadline. I can still see them selling guys. Selling sounds weird, but
it does sound weird.
But them making moves that change the roster slash add to their war chest of picks already that they already have. Like the Jazz, the back half of this decade, the Jazz, they're going to have like 5 picks a draft, it feels like. And it's crazy to consider that, but that's just kind of what they've done. When they traded 2 guys like Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell, among others, that has yielded all that. But there's still moves to be made around the perimeter. Could Jordan Clarkson, I know he's playing really good ball right now as well, could he still be on his way out? He's a guy who's got the ability to be an impact player on a contender. Like, you could put him in a 6-man role. He's been starting most of this season for the Jazz, and he's really kind of transformed his game. He's gone from Jordan Clarkson, instant offense, like just the microwave. But he's been distributing. I think he's averaging a career high in assists on the season. Let's see. Yeah, 5.3 assists. He's really transformed his game. Could he be a trade piece that some team said we're desperate for a guy like that, and they're willing to give you a bunch for him? Okay, you make a move like that. Talen Horton Tucker feels like a guy that could be on the trade block. John Collins. All these guys seem like they're very capable of moving them. But for the time being, until that happens, you have found, like I said, the right combination of, okay, this guy plays with this guy in this lineup, and it has yielded the results you wanted. Because this is a team that's gone from, near the bottom of the lottery, where they'd be in the argument for a top 10 pick, to now they're very much in play-in territory, if not outright playoff territory.
Who would have thought, based off of the start?
You and everybody else, because all of us are like, we're watching this team like, all right, well, this is the team we expected to see a year ago, but because of guys like Mike Conley, et cetera, they'd really kind of hung together and played really good ball, and then the Jazz traded Mike Conley, and the bottom kind of fell out. They kind of said, you know what? We're going for positioning here. The thing is, I've also written this. I put this on KSLSports.com. I did an article last week with some predictions. This year's NBA draft looks, compared to others of recent, looks very weak.
Right.
And the Jazz currently have a pick in this year's draft. If it's top 10, they don't have to send it to OKC to complete a deal. The way the Jazz are playing right now, the Jazz don't mind sending that pick to OKC if it falls outside of the top 10 because of the way, looking at how the draft is shaping up right now.
Right.
And you might get the best of both worlds. A, you finish that, get off of that trade, which, because I think it conveys in the next 2 years as well, even with that. And at the same time, you have found a team that suddenly, after a horrendous start, is actually playing good ball, and could you find yourself sneaking into the playoffs? That, maybe the storyline, okay, the climb for the Jazz after last year said, okay, they played well, they pulled the trigger on at the end and said, okay, we're going to, good for positioning here, made some deals, added some players, and now the next step was, okay, can they get back into playoff territory? Well, the start this year said, not a chance.
Mm-hmm.
We're going in reverse.
Yes.
If this 10-2 run, if this can continue, I know 10-2 seems unsustainable in the NBA. It's just the grind of the season. But if you're winning more often than you're losing, the way the Jazz are playing right now, and they're at 500 currently, they're on a trajectory to be in the play-in right now. And that would be a really, really nice thing to have watched them go from an awful start and really turn it on here. Kind of the midway point, I think game 42 is Monday night, if I recall, against Indiana. But it's a big opportunity here for the Jazz.
So from your perspective, do you think they want to make that playoff run, or do you think they want the picks. Like, what do you think they're going to possibly do here?
I think they want to convey that pick. So they don't want to be in the top 10 because the stuff I've read about different draft things out there say that the top of the draft is like a complete muddled mess. Like, nobody really knows who the top guy or top guys are going to be. Mm-hmm. Now, maybe one of those guys will establish himself in the back half of the college or other seasons, because with anymore with all of this, you have so many ways that guys come into the league: overtime elite, the G League Ignite, overseas, and obviously the traditional route of the college basketball world. But I think the Jazz are totally okay saying, okay, here you go, Oklahoma City, take that pick. And if they feel like there's a guy maybe in that middle part of the draft, or maybe late in the first round, they're like, you know what? Danny Ainge has got the assets to call a team up and say, okay, what do I got to give you to get back in?
Right.
That's the thing about this. I think that they want to make the push. I think that they've seen Will Hardy tinker enough with this lineup, get enough out of them to saying, okay, let's see what we can do here. I don't see them pulling that ripcord at the end of the year and sitting Lowry Marketing for a hangnail. Like, that. But that's what was happening last year, because they realized, you know, okay, we've done what we needed to do here. We're pulling the ripcord on the season. The way things are going right now, I don't see them pulling that ripcord. Now, could the next 12-game stretch them go 2-10 and be right back into the thick of the lottery race? Sure. But the way that they're playing right now seems like a very sustainable model, at least in the interim.
Well, I'm excited to see. It's
let's
crazy. Let's find out what y'all are gonna do.
It's kind of funny because it's just I sat there last night and my wife was watching with me, and she doesn't watch a lot of Jazz games with me because she just gets annoyed because I just kind of mutter to myself about things. Like, she's like, are you talking to me? I'm like, no, I'm just talking about the game. And she's like, okay, and it drives her nuts. But that's just the way I am with most sporting events. I kind of just sit there and just analyze it. And watching this team last night, I'm like, okay. There isn't that much different from last year's team.
Yeah.
You brought in, you drafted Taylor Hendricks, you drafted Keontae George, and you drafted Bryce Sensabaugh. Mm-hmm. Well, Keontae George is the only one that's currently in the lineup and in the rotation. Bryce Hendricks and Sensabaugh, they're guys that they're more of projects. You're probably projecting them maybe 2-3 years down the line of being contributors. Mm-hmm. But Keontae George is really the only newcomer outside of John Collins to this lineup. I'm looking at it, I'm like, okay, this lineup was so bad.
Yeah.
So bad earlier this year. And you watch them now and you're like, they're putting up 145 points. They had another game, I think it was against the Pistons here at home, not too long. 154-148. It was an overtime game. It was close to the franchise record for points in a single game. Last night, 145. They put up 124 on the Nuggets. And by the way, that Nuggets win, of all of these wins for the Jazz of late, that Nuggets win is the most impressive, because unlike the Milwaukee win, unlike the 76ers win, the Nuggets had all of their dudes, including Nikola Jokic, playing in this game. And the Jazz went toe-to-toe with them, took control in the first quarter, and never let go. Just controlled it from start to finish. Really, I'm telling you, the transformation of this team, without making major lineup changes in season, it's pretty crazy. It's been really fun to watch, and you got to give a massive amount of credit to a guy like Will Hardy, who probably at the start of the season is like, I don't even know what I'm doing here. Like, who do we got? Like, well, I don't have Lowry Markkanen. Okay, great. I got one all-star. What else do I have? And all he has done all season long is tinker with the lineup. I remember I paid attention to a lot of the social media discourse on the Jazz, and people were saying, why is THT here? And why is Keon? There were so many moving parts all of the time. And it was game to game, it felt like, at times. You'd have a guy play an extended run in this role, and then it was just it's really, really fun to have watched what they have done. I am interested, because we're at 40 games now, so we're about halfway through the season. If this type of run is in the Jazz's back pocket, like, they can keep that going in the back half of the season, they could go from 10th, and they could be playing for a sixth spot or whatnot. That's the type of trajectory currently they're on.
Mm-hmm.
I do think they will cool off to a degree, because, like I said, 10-2 in the NBA, it's not all that common. Well, in fact, it's actually pretty uncommon. And I think that the biggest thing is that as long as they avoid injury, this is a team that's going to be in play-in territory down the stretch.
Well, and that begs the question, too. How much of this do you think is them catching people by surprise? And once there's, like, enough film out there on them, they're maybe not going to, you know, get some of the wins that they've been getting as of late.
Well, and that will come because here's the thing. There are so many people on so many staffs now. If you watch NBA games, look how many coaches are on the benches of these. There's as many coaches as there are players. Most of their job is to watch film, analyze it, and find ways to attack you. There are going to be teams that poke holes in the new Jazz lineup, and they'll find ways to attack the Jazz. And yes, that will, as you mentioned, cool them off to a degree. But the nice part is the Jazz have been very good all year long about finding kind of counters to when people try and peg them down. And that points directly back, by the way, to like the first like 5 or 10 games. The Jazz were running an offense they'd kind of installed all training camp long, and they got into the season and realized, this ain't working.
Yeah.
It isn't working. They scrapped it. They completely scrapped it and revamped it on the fly. And that kind of has shown that Will Hardy, he's not married to this is how we do things. This is the system we want to run. Yes, he has ideas of what he'd like ultimately for this Jazz team probably to be, because this is a guy who worked with Greg Popovich. Greg Popovich is like his grandson in a way, or his protege.
Yeah.
And I'm sure he'd like to do something what San Antonio's done with Pop. But it's going to take time to build that up. The nice part is he has shown that he is malleable. He's capable of making changes in season when it'd be very easy to say, you know what, this is what we got. We're rolling with it. He could very easily could have said, you know what, we're just going to see what happens here. His willingness to adapt, to change things, and literally change them on the fly has been really, really fun. And I'm not saying that the Jazz are going to be, they get into the playoffs, they're going to be making a run. I don't expect that.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that they could find themselves in play-in territory and be playing in the postseason, that'd be really, really cool to see, because it did take a lot of changes for them to get to this level.
I like hearing that he's not stuck in his ways,
yeah.
Will Hardy. I mean, like, because that's a lot of coaches. That is a lot of coaches. Well, this is how I do things. You guys either figure it out or I'll probably ask for you to be traded and get guys that will run my system. I think that's good that he's willing to play with things and work with the tools that he has rather than cut his nose to spite his face.
Yes, and that... It's interesting to watch this Jazz team play as well, because you can tell that there were times this year you'd watch them on the bench and you'd be like, yeah, things aren't
going great.
They're not kosher right now. People
are not happy.
Yeah, they ain't flowing the way it should. But the nice part is you're starting to see this team like they're at, and it happens with every team. You win, people are happy. Like,
oh, winning solves everything.
Yeah, it does,
as they say.
And that's the thing about it is I think that it has really gotten these guys to be like, okay, you know what? Life's not that bad. Like we're doing some good things here. So it'll be interesting to see where it ultimately shakes out, what the Jazz do on the back half of this. But I still expect there'll be some roster changes in lead up to the NBA trade deadline, because Danny Ainge doesn't have the nickname Trader Danny for no reason. Like, this is a guy who is willing to make deals. Now, Danny does only make deals on his terms.
Right.
Like, Danny, it's not, you call up Danny, he's like, let's do it. He'll tell you, he's like, all right, this is what I want. And a lot of times, and I've heard, you read these stories about Danny, a lot of teams will hang up like, we ain't working with him. And then all of a sudden they get into like desperation mode. They call him back up and he's like, ready to talk?
So, like, you need me now.
Yeah, so it's pretty impressive what he's done in his career. He's proven it time and time again. I am interested to see how many changes he makes, decides, okay, what do we need to do here? Do we need to alter this? And I'm sure Will Hardy's having a say in that. Like, he's saying, okay, I need X piece over here. And they're, I'm sure he'd say, I'd like 2 or 3 more All-Stars. And Danny Ainge's like, sure, I'd like that too. Come on. Like that'd be awesome.
Who doesn't want that?
Oh, by the way, that's interesting. Did you see this?
Oh.
So
Snow Squall?
Yeah, exactly. But nonetheless, so crazy things. We'll see what happens with the Jazz. But that just coming across, we need to talk about it with Randy Mueller coming up next. So the Buffalo Bills-Pittsburgh Steelers game, literally just moments ago, they're moving it to Monday. Is that right? Alex, you've been paying attention.
Yes, that is right. They're moving it to Monday at 4 p.m.
Okay.
For the snowstorm.
So a doubleheader on Monday. And so we're going to get doubleheaders every day then. So we got 2 today, we got 2 tomorrow, and then the 2 on Monday. By the way, tonight's game, -30 wind chills in Kansas City for the Miami Dolphins.
Eesh.
And like Miami, like, come on, it's like 70 degrees. Those guys are all soft, and they have to go to like the coldest place on the planet right now and play a football game tonight. Good luck, Miami.
Yeah, have fun with that.
Like Tyreek Hill's like, I left this place for a reason. All right, we'll come back on the other side. We'll get into the NFL. Randy Mueller will join us, former NFL executive, also spent time in the XFL and the AAF with the Salt Lake Stallions. We'll get to all that next. This is the Saturday Show right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Welcome back to the Saturday Show here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Michelle Bodkin, Jay Catch, along for the ride on this Saturday morning. Hope you're doing well out there, keeping warm here along the Wasatch Front. Crazy forecast, just straight snow it feels like. Now, other places have got similar type weather. We have just learned that the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Buffalo Bills, the New York governor made that call to move that game to Monday afternoon. So we'll be interested to watch that. Double headers on the NFL all weekend long with playoffs. And that brings on our next guest, Randy Mueller. He's a former NFL executive, also spent time in the Alliance of American Football with the Salt Lake Stallions, the XFL. He's been all over the place and currently hosts the Football GM podcast on The Athletic. Randy, thank you for carving out some time for us on Saturday. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. My pleasure to be with you guys.
Now, let's start off with that news that you're barely coming across. Buffalo is a place that is notorious for getting some of these crazy snowstorms. There have been multiple games played there in the snow. What are your thoughts on the fact that they're actually moving that game from tomorrow to Monday?
Well, if they got to this extreme, there's no doubt the forecast is shaky at best. And you're right. They're used to dealing with snow in Buffalo.
Yeah.
So that tells me they've got something major on the way. And I think it makes sense. I mean, the NFL can hog three full days instead of two and a half now. And I don't think anybody will suffer with ratings on a Monday late afternoon game, even in the West. So I think it makes sense. I think there's anytime there's safety involved, the NFL is going to be up for whatever's best to keep the visitors, the fans, everybody safe. And not only that, but the players and the staff.
Well, first of all, hello again, boss. It's been a minute.
Boss, that's
awesome.
I know that voice.
You've been in this industry for a long, long time with the playoffs kind of coming up and Pro Bowl selections coming up. There's been a lot of talk about per capita, the amount of talent that the state of Utah produces in the NFL, whether it's via college or whether these are kids that actually played high school ball and moved on. You know, when you were in the process of putting together rosters, you know, how seriously, you know, were you looking at guys that came from Utah for one reason or another?
I think it's always been a fairly high priority targeted area, Michelle, but I think you're right. Even more so now, you see players that are excelling at the highest level in the NFL. And so you do want to dip into that. The other thing is, I think it's a credit to the programs collegiately, whether it's Kyle at Utah or at BYU, what they've been able to produce. A lot of top talented kids come through there, and you know you're going to get kids that are coached up well. They have also the DNA of winning, and I think that's important. So you get guys that actually understand the professional game, and you really just take them, and they've kind of been pros already. They've worked at a pace where they're going to be asked to do that still at the NFL level. So there's less guesswork and less dots to connect when people come from that area to the NFL.
Now, Randy, the NFL is an interesting animal out there because I look at, so I'm going to use the example of Puka Nacua here. Obviously, BYU, when they had him on the field at BYU, he was awesome. But his big question mark coming out of BYU was his health. He only played, I think, seven games his final season in Provo. And then he comes out and has put together a potential offensive rookie of the year type campaign for the Los Angeles Rams. What do you attribute that to? Because this is a guy, like I said, who his big thing why he dropped to the fifth round for most people was his ability to stay on the field. And he's been healthy this entire year and has put together one of those more marvelous seasons, a record-breaking season, in fact, for a rookie.
Yeah, it's a storybook story for sure. I credit him for this. He is obviously taking care of his body. He's been able to endure a full season, like you said. But I think part of the reason he slipped as well is that his strength is his instincts and his innate ability to play football. And sometimes those little things that are intangibles are really hard for scouts to really recognize. They can go to a pro day and watch a guy run 4.4 and think, wow, this guy can really do this or that. But you really have to dive into the tape and study a full body of work to get that instinctive, intangible side of his game. And maybe it's because of the injuries and his body work was, you know, disrupted because of that. Maybe the scouts didn't see that, but the first thing I saw this year when I watched tape on him was the instincts and the natural football ability to adjust on the fly and make plays that normally guys can't make, especially young guys in our league.
I know when we were working together, I think I was pretty annoying talking about that 2019 Utah football team and in the lead up to that season, how good I thought that they would be. And I think part of that's because Dennis was so critical to recruiting a lot of those guys that were on that team. But now we're seeing those guys produce in the NFL. Jalen Johnson just named an all-pro selection. You have Zach Moss that kind of came on strong this year. Julian Blackman came on strong. Matt Gaze had a really great season. You know, looking back, what do you think of the guys that kind of came out of that class for Utah?
Well, I think it's an awesome class, and you're right. It's a testament, really, I think, to the program and the fact that they can teach football skills. I find that NFL scouts nowadays and a lot of evaluators, even above the scouting level, will use measurables to determine exactly what a player can or cannot do, and they put a cap on somebody if they don't run as fast or if they're not as big and strong measured on paper. And I think that team itself was a testament that it was football players. It was a lot of guys like we just talked about with Nacua. It's instinctive football players that play beyond their measurables. And I think a lot of people think, well, that's overachieving. It's really not overachieving, because part of the equation is intangibles. And you have to be able to, as an evaluator, measure that and then also record that with decision makers. A lot of times, if guys don't run fast, the main decision maker never gets to see them. So you're dependent on some lower level scouting guys, and that's not good. Trust me, because I think they're less apt to recommend players who don't jump out after a workout or a pro day.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. Like, when it comes to the NFL draft process, there are just so many players out there to have to evaluate. And you're right, you as a GM or an executive, you do have to rely on your scouts to be able to go out there and find guys. What is the workload like for an NFL executive in the draft process versus obviously you have to manage the current roster, you have to deal with coaches, so many different things, you have so many different hats you're wearing. How much can you really dedicate to the talent discovery process?
Well, I think it's probably the most misjudged element of the job is all the other things that you just said. Guys that get these GM jobs now, I think the people doing the hiring sometimes think we can just take this guy, put him in a room, and let him pick players. That's about 10% of the job. The rest of it is all the other things that you said. It's dealing with people. It's managing issues. It's fixing things that go haywire during the course of the season. And it's allocating your time and really listening to build consensus, to keep everybody on the same page. It's a full-time job to keep everybody in a building on the same page. As Michelle can tell you, we're all about three games away from a total mutiny if you don't watch it. So whether the mutiny comes from within, that's the biggest problem. So you've got to be able to keep and manage and communicate with people, hear people out, and that's the task that a lot of these GMs struggle with most. They wish they could just sit in a room and evaluate and draw up ideas about players and things that they like about them, but that's not part of it. I know this. It was the thing that I coveted the most as a GM, and I used to tell the people around me, give me some time today carved out so I can actually look at film. It's the hardest thing to get time to do, but yet that's your livelihood. And sometimes what I would find is I would find myself looking at tape from 7 o'clock at night till 10 because it was quiet, or I'd be in there early at 5 a.m. and I'd have till 8 before distraction started. So your days are long, that's for sure.
That feels like a pretty good segue into the spring leagues. And the first one obviously was here in Salt Lake with the Stallions. And then obviously you've gone on with the XFL a couple of different times. But specifically looking at the time in Salt Lake, communication was a big thing that you drove home with all of us on your staff, and just making sure that you're available. But, you know, looking back on that time, was there anything like just particularly crazy or that stood out to you? It felt like our team actually was in pretty good shape as far as not causing problems, unlike others. But what do you remember most about being here in Salt Lake?
Well, it was a challenging set of circumstances for sure, Michelle. And I smile when you mention some of the things that really were struggling for us. And the biggest thing that we had to deal with was the lack of facilities. That was hard. We were at a disadvantage. And in fact, after the league went by the wayside, Bill Polian called me one day and he said, "Hey, I just got to apologize to you." He said, "We put you in an untenable situation with facilities and all the things that came with it. We were at a big disadvantage. As you know, we built locker rooms out of shipping containers out by RSL and including showers and everything else. And there should be a 30 for 30 just on the setup that we have."
Yeah.
We spent a lot of time on buses. And truth be known, we spent more time in San Antonio, Texas than we did in Salt Lake just because the facilities were better for us there. So it was challenging. But, hey, the reason I did it was for all that reason. I had 30 years in the NFL already. I've been fortunate. I didn't have to do anything. But I love that team-building aspect, that camaraderie with the people. And that's why I did it. And they allowed me to have some bandwidth to hire the people that I wanted to hire and people I enjoyed being around. And he mentioned Dennis, one of my favorite people of all time, people like yourself and others that I just loved. And that's the part that is fun when you're experiencing crazy things, like you mentioned, but yet it's with the people you want to be around. So that's a fun, it's valuable at the end of the day. I'll say this, I've been involved in three of these spring leagues now where you built teams from scratch. Mm-hmm. If NFL GMs had that opportunity, it would make them so much better. Just going through that experience of building teams from scratch, they have no idea, because most of these guys that get these NFL jobs now haven't really built anything. Sometimes they're two chairs away from the GM spot, and they get given one of these opportunities. So building and having reps at building, I thought, was really important, and there are very few that get that chance. Sometimes you might get a chance in the NFL to do it once, but I feel lucky because I've got to do it three times in the spring league. And maybe you're not adding NFL quality players all the time, but the process itself of building is something that's very valuable.
I can definitely see that. You bringing up the staying in San Antonio thing, I think you might enjoy this because I don't think I ever said anything. But the day that you asked me to come downstairs to talk to you about staying longer in San Antonio, I was in a panic. I thought for sure you were going to fire me. So
bring your playbook, Michelle.
Yes. So I was actually quite relieved when it was just, are you available to stay longer in San Antonio? And I mean, maybe if I had thought about it a little bit harder, I would have said no. Just kidding. No, I would not have said no. But I don't think it really sunk in, like how much longer we were going to stay there. I was just so relieved that it wasn't like a bad news thing. So that made me laugh. And that was really, I don't know, an interesting time. Very, very interesting getting stuck out in San Antonio for an extra month while we waited for shipping containers.
Yeah, it was an interesting and challenging time, like we've often said. But hey, think about it. When are you going to get that kind of experience, especially at your age, to go through something like that? Those are memories you'll have the rest of your life. And yeah, maybe all of them or a lot of them were challenging, but it was a great experience. It made us all better. It obviously kindled some friendships that we'll have forever. And I looked at it as a positive. It was challenging. And like we used to say during that time, you can't make this stuff up. It's like every week we had new challenges.
Randy, before we let you go, I just wanted to get your thought on the playoffs as a whole. It feels like to me, and I'll get your thought on this because I listen to you on the Football GM podcast often, but do you think that this playoffs for the NFL is as open as most people think it is? Because I think it could be wide open.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think obviously the teams with the bye, the 49ers and the Ravens, are, you know, sitting and watching now. But I truly think you could make a case for anybody to beat anybody, even when those teams get involved. So it's always the way of it's about matchups in the playoffs. Yeah. And the matchups within rosters and within teams and within coordinators and staffs are fascinating to me. And I think a lot of people see the players on the field, but there's a lot more to it than that. And I always like to dig into the coordinators matchup because now they're studying everything that happened during the season to get ready for one game. Coaching really matters in the playoffs, and especially at the highest level, the further you get into the playoffs. The other thing is, some of these teams have played each other. When you get division rivals that have played each other twice already, it is really hard. And I'm not sure who has the advantage in matchups to where if it's a third game. For example, if the Browns had to play the Ravens again or the Steelers. And these teams are – there's no secrets. And it's fun to watch what these coaches will come up with next. So I agree with you. I think it's a wide-open playoffs, maybe as wide-open as I can remember the last few years.
What is the coldest temperature you've ever experienced in the NFL? Because they're talking about the Kansas City thing tonight, negative 30 potentially with wind chills. Have you ever experienced anything like that?
Well, I don't know. I've never experienced something that cold, and I've experienced some crazy weather. One time we played in Kansas City as well when I was in Seattle, and there were literally white caps on the field. It had rained so long and so far. I'm serious. There were white caps on the field, and the game got suspended for a couple hours. And in fact, you get a kick out of this. I had to go down on the field to talk. Dennis was our coach with the Seahawks, Dennis Erickson.
Oh,
and the league wanted to know, what are you going to do if we cancel this game? When do you want to come back? Do you want to do this? Do you want to do that? I said, well, I don't want to really decide this on my own. I got to go see Dennis. And so during the game, you'll get a kick out of this. I'm in a suit and tie and rain boots up to my knees, and I'm waiting down on the sidelines in a monsoon. And I tap Dennis on the shoulder, and he looks over at me, what the heck are you doing here? He knew that was not the place for me. And I asked him this real quickly, and he said, I don't care what you do, just get us out of here. Just get us out of this weather. I don't care when we come back. I just don't want to be here. Needless to say, they postponed it again, and we finished it that night. But crazy weather brings crazy stories, that's for sure.
That's awesome. Well, Randy, it's awesome to hear from you. We'll do it again soon, hopefully. Maybe have you on as the playoffs kind of progress here. But keep good work with the Football GM podcast. Encourage everybody to subscribe to that and listen to it. And obviously, keep up the other stuff. I know you have your website and everything. What all are you doing? Kind of explain where you're at these days.
Well, I am really with The Athletic full-time, and
okay,
they've been really
it.
Good to me. I write for them weekly, and like you said, do a podcast with Mike Sando, their national writer, and we've done that for about 3 years now. So my full-time duty, and which allows me to have a life, I'm a hunter and a fisherman, as Michelle can tell you, and mm-hmm. I spend a lot of time at Lake Coeur d'Alene, but I can't do that in this wintertime, so The Athletic keeps me plenty busy, that's for sure.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, thanks for taking the time today. And as I said, we'll have you back on soon to talk more about the NFL and reminisce on old times with the Stallions, et cetera. All right.
Sounds good, guys. Good to be with you.
There you go. Randy Mueller, I guess I should say just from The Athletic now, because I didn't know that was his full-time thing. But I did know about he is an outdoorsman at heart.
Mm-hmm. So I was not a part of this meeting. This is kind of a funny how small sports is, though. Mm-hmm. Our DFO Ryan, our scout Matt, and Dennis met up in Coeur d'Alene mm-hmm. at a bar called One Shot Charlie's.
Okay.
It's a famous place. To kind of get into gear what our game plan was moving forward. And they told me about this. And like, I have a picture on my phone of the four of them up there, you know, making plans, whatever. And after the Stallions shut down and I'm back to doing my normal thing, I get to know a player on the Utah football team's family quite well.
Okay.
And his mom does my sister owns a bar up in Coeur d'Alene. Like, I'm going to send you a sweatshirt. So I get this sweatshirt and I'm like, One Shot Charlie's. I know this place.
It's awesome.
So, so small world.
Okay.
But yeah, super fun. Great times, as Randy mentioned. Just some of the most like mind-boggling, hilarious things happened, and at the time, kind of frustrating.
Sure.
But like, now you look back at it and you just have to laugh because it's just, this is just ridiculous. Like, who does this sort of stuff? But it did. It forged a lot of great friendships, relationships. And interestingly enough, even though maybe a little outside the realm of normalcy, I think we all learned a whole heck of a lot. And I know it's made me better as a reporter, having gone through some of that stuff.
Sure,
and,
yeah.
And, you know, other people, where they've gone. And I'm looking forward to bringing on some others. We already have, I think, next week's lined up. So it'll be a good time.
Yeah, should be fun. As you mentioned, you've kind of been through the fire, as it were, and it helps you, I think, in your reporting, because you're like, I've been on the other side of that. Like, I can.
Yeah, like it's. If only fans really knew what goes on behind closed doors, but you can't know, because some of that's just not for public consumption at all.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, we will come back on the other side. We'll round out the first hour of the program with technical fouls. Coming up in the 11 o'clock hour, we're going to talk some college basketball. We also got NFL playoffs, college football, coaching changes like rocking the world. I know.
What?
Nick Saban. Wow.
We should have asked Randy actually about Pete Carroll.
We should have.
Another time.
You can have him back on. That's just an excuse to have him back on. But all right, coming up next, technical fouls right here. 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
If you're coming from the street with dirty shoes on your feet, that's a technical foul. If you switch the radio to some modern music show, that's a technical foul. If you touch the thermostat,
you'll get hit with a bat.
Cause that's a technical foul.
You will feel my wrath.
That's a technical foul.
Personal file, 69, offense. He was giving them the business.
A technical foul.
Welcome back to the Saturday Show here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Michelle and Jake along for the ride. Time now for technical fouls. Before we get into this, guys, you guys follow Shooter McGavin on Twitter or on X, like the parody account. You need to follow it. This is absolutely hilarious.
Oh, no.
Steeler Bills has been postponed because of a few snowflakes on the field. Meanwhile, a TV tower was stationed in the middle of the 18th green, and we were told to deal with it. How times have changed. It's a great account. Whoever runs it does a really, really good job with it. So play it as it lies, Mr. Gilmore. All right, good times. But anyways, all right, time now for technical fouls. We'll start off with yours, Michelle, because I think it's the most timely because it happened last night. So what do you got for us?
Yeah, so we are technical fouling the Pac-12 refs that were in charge of trying to keep order, I suppose, of the women's basketball game last night. You know, it's one of those things I can admit, in the moment, I don't necessarily see or understand the fouls. But when I go back and I look at things frame by frame and have things pointed out to me, yeah, not good. How that was called a jump ball when you basically have two people mugging another person, I don't know. And that was only one of the things that went wrong. Missing a shot clock violation. I forget all what went wrong. And here's the thing. I don't know if it necessarily makes a difference one way or another in who wins that game.
Mm-hmm.
Because there were things that Utah did not do that also contributed to that. But I just how can you still have a job when you're that blatantly bad at it is my whole point. I just very disappointing, and it's kind of disappointing that we don't really have a system in place that bad refs get held accountable because
True.
The coaches can't say anything, they get fined. And what if they have a legitimate complaint like the other night, like what are they supposed to do?
Well, I can tell you, so Tuesday BYU played Baylor and there was supposed to be a jump ball towards the end of that game that they called a foul on BYU, and Mark Pope
just about lost it,
exploded a water bottle, to put it kindly.
Oh yes, I saw that. Okay.
Yeah, and after the game they asked, like, so what do you think? He's like, I'd really like to tell you what I'm thinking right now.
Yeah,
because if they do, they get reprimanded.
Yeah, they're the ones that get in trouble.
Yeah.
And the people that caused the problem in the first place walk off scot-free. I just don't get it.
Yeah, here's the thing. The product of college basketball is already struggling, I guess is the kindest way I can put it. It's not that entertaining to me, like as
right.
a consumer. And the officiating infuriates me to no end. I'll go back to that BYU-Baylor game for a bit. And it's probably a similar circumstance last night. I probably could look at the stats and be similar. 40-minute game for college basketball. You know how many fouls there were in that Baylor-BYU game? 39.
Oh, my.
Almost an average of one per minute. Way too many. Let them play. Just figure it out. And there is an officiating crisis. I get that nobody really wants to be a referee because it's not fun, but
yeah,
y'all got to do better.
Yeah. It's not an excuse to mail it in.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, Alex, you all want to real quick?
I want to give a technical foul to the NBA on TNT crew for a poor Thursday night basketball night.
Uh-oh.
Okay, it's not necessarily their fault. It was the night of, like, blowouts across the league. So it was supposed to be Bucks-Celtics. Like,
yes.
Two best teams in the Eastern Conference. Like, okay, setting up, this is going to be great. It was 162 in the third quarter in favor of Milwaukee, and they moved away from it to other programming. But by the way, the only other game that really was that close was the Knicks-Mavericks, which was a 20-point lead at that point. And that game ended up being a really good one. But, yeah, it was not the best night for TNT, I'll give you that.
Well, and then you also had the Trailblazers up 62 on Portland.
Oklahoma City up on Portland.
Me. Yep, that's right. And then so you had Charles Barkley milking a cow on live TV instead of basketball.
Okay, here's the thing. Inside the NBA, I don't know how they continue to do it, but they are still the gold standard when it comes to studio shows.
Oh,
across
100%.
All sports. I'm talking NFL, Major League Baseball, it doesn't matter what the sport is, inside the NBA on TNT is the gold standard when it comes to studio shows.
I love them. And they're super funny, and they are the standard, and I think they right now are kind of running that little studio analysis for across all sports.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to keep it with the studio show thing. By the way, technical foul to ESPN. Did you guys see this, by the way? They've been circumventing back to at least 1997, potentially longer, circumventing rules around sports Emmy awards and submitting fake names into these awards to get them for their talent, then going and re-engraving them and giving them to their on-air personality so they can have extra sports Emmys to grace their, I don't know, sets, their mantle pieces in their homes.
That's taking the gold star thing a little far, uh-huh. Don't you think?
So the biggest culprit, by the way, ESPN's College Game Day. Awards handed out to Kirk Henry, an alias for Kirk Herbstreit, Lee Clark, a.k.a. Lee Corso, Stephen Ponder, a.k.a. Samantha Ponder, who now Sam now does NFL stuff for
Fox.
Since the start of NATA's investigation, which hands out these Sports Emmy Awards, into the fraud, 37 improperly obtained trophies have been returned, while at least two employees, Craig Lazarus and the since-departed Lee Fitting, who, by the way, Lee was like the man in terms of production. He ran College Game Day forever. They've been ruled ineligible from future Emmy participation. So,
I mean, good. Like, don't make stuff up to make yourself look better than you are. That's just the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
But here's the thing. Watch game day next year. There's going to be like, I'm here for Lee Clark.
The signs are probably going to be great.
They just opened up a whole new can of worms with that. All right. We will come back on the other side. We'll talk some college basketball, some NBA basketball. There's a piece of sound that you two have not heard that we played earlier this week. It comes from Toronto Raptors head coach Darko Rajakovic. He went off on the referees. Talk about people not being happy. He had a good one. We'll get to all that next right here on the Saturday Show. Ooka chaka, ooka, ooka, ooka chaka, ooka, ooka, ooka chaka, ooka, ooka, ooka chaka, ooka, ooka, ooka. I can't stop this feeling deep inside of me. Girl, you just don't realize this song is awesome. Welcome back to the Saturday Show here on 97.5 the KSL Sports Zone. Michelle Bodkin there, Jake Hatch here. So this song obviously kind of got put back into the, I guess, public consciousness because of Guardians of the Galaxy. Now, did you know that Guardians of the Galaxy came out 10 years ago?
Really?
Yeah.
I still haven't seen it.
Michelle.
I'm not a movie watcher, though.
I'm not that much either, but come on.
I have not seen that movie, but I know that this is associated with that. When I hear this song...
You haven't seen it?
I haven't seen it.
I'm stunned.
The list of movies I haven't seen versus the ones have seen is longer.
Alex, as you get to know Michelle, you'll realize that she's right about this. She doesn't watch a lot of movies. I'll make a reference. And I'm not very good at referencing movies, and I've caught her multiple times myself, so.
Yeah. Although usually I get references to stuff, but then it's funny, or I'll even reference stuff, but it's like, oh yeah, and by the way, I've never seen this, but I'm making this reference because I know it exists. No, never seen it. I associate it with, you're too young. You will not know what I'm talking about. You might know what I'm talking about. I think her name was Alyssa Flockhart, and she had a TV show.
Calista Flockhart?
Yes. And there was this famous scene with a baby dancing that everybody freaked out about because it was so weird. I think one of the first digitized animated sort of things, and it at least at the time looked really real, but it freaked people out. But it was dancing to that song.
Okay.
I vaguely
remember this. I know the one thing I know about Calista Flockhart, she's married to Harrison Ford.
Yeah.
That's one thing I know about. But it sounds vaguely familiar. So.
Yeah, it was a whole, and I don't remember or understand it because I was probably 6 or 7. But I remember looking at that baby and hearing the song and doing it. That's kind of freaky.
Allie McBeal, Ooga Chaka baby dance. I just Googled it on YouTube. So there you go. So she was, okay. All right.
That's what I associate that song with.
Okay. All right. Let's see. So on Allie McBeal, the dancing baby showed up as a symbol of Allie's fear about her biological clock. And it is that dancing baby that's that famous meme now.
Yeah.
So there you go. That's where it comes from. Hey, good, nice pull on you. Well done there.
See?
So that song, it'll always make me laugh because my wife and I started dating, we're 10 years now. And when that movie came out, I was super excited to see it. I like the Marvel Universe. That whole run through there was great. And I was so excited to go see this movie. And she's like, what movie are we going to see? This is so dumb.
Are you making me do?
That's exactly. It was totally. And so we go down, sit and watch it. We walk out and she's like, okay, I need to apologize. That was awesome.
And that's what I've heard.
We've always loved that movie since. When we were dating. But she was so out on that when we were walking in. She's like, what are we seeing here? What are we doing?
I really like you this much?
Bingo.
Do I need to figure my way out of this relationship?
I made it a solid decade. I'm good. We've done something positive here. I've got 3 kids now. Some worked out there, but nonetheless, so that will always make me laugh. All right. Let's get back to sports here. Now, I've been promising to play this audio for you guys, just kind of keep the hilarity up. We'll get to that and we'll flip over to college basketball here in a moment, but Darko Rajakovic, he is the head coach of the Toronto Raptors. Now, Jazz trounced the Raptors last night, and he made these comments. This comes from, I think, Tuesdays when he made them. That the night before, the Raptors were in LA to take on the Lakers.
Mm-hmm.
They were in a good game back and forth, but the free throw disparity, you want to talk about bad officiating? In the fourth quarter, Michelle, the fourth quarter of this game, 23 free throws for the Los Angeles Lakers, 2 for the Toronto Raptors.
Oh, boy.
Anthony Davis scored 20 of his 41 points in that quarter, and I think more than half of those points came at the line. Abysmal. Absolutely abysmal.
Oh.
And let's just put it this way. Darko Rajakovic is going to pay $25,000. That's the fine he's been issued for these comments. Here you go.
What happened tonight, this is completely BS. This is shame. Shame for the referees, shame for the league to allow this. 23 free throws for them, and we get 2 free throws in the fourth quarter. How to play the game. I understand respect for all stars and all of that, but we have star players on our team as well. How's possible that Scottie Barnes, who is all-star caliber player in this league, he goes every single time to the rim with force, trying to get to the rim without flopping and not trying to get foul calls. He gets 2 free throws for the whole game. How's that possible? How are you going to explain that to me? They had to win tonight? If that's the case, just let us know so we don't show up for the game. Just give them a win. But that was not fair tonight. And this is not happening first time for us. Scottie Barnes is going to be all-star. He's going to be the face of this league. And what's happening over here during whole season, I've been holding you back. It's a complete crap.
It's a complete crap.
I agree with you, Gru.
Nice, well done. Yes, well, nice pull. But here's the thing. Officiating, yes, it's not ideal. And when something as egregious as that, it's pretty glaring. And it bugs people. It affects the integrity in people's minds of the games themselves because it's the Los Angeles Lakers and the Toronto Raptors. Well, guess what? When the Lakers get that friendly whistle, everybody's like, oh, great. Look at LA getting another another break here.
It casts a shadow of a doubt.
Yeah, and that's the concern you got to have. So it just made me chuckle because it's complete crap. Such BS. But
shame on your family. Shame on everybody.
Exactly. I'm going to disagree with him on the fact I don't necessarily think Scotty Barnes is the future face of the NBA.
Yeah,
but
I don't know about that.
That's the only one I would take issue with him saying in terms of his comments there, because Scotty Barnes is a good player, but face of the NBA?
Well, we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see.
You have to get to a bigger market if you want to be the face of the NBA.
Brock needs to go to LA, get those whistles.
Jeez, yes. That or Miami or New York. One of the hotbeds, as it were. But
the favorites.
Yeah, and crazy stuff. By the way, on the college basketball front, let's just kind of keep with the officiating theme here. The Utah men, Thursday night.
Yeah. Woohoo!
90-44? Like I checked in at halftime on that game, so I had other stuff going, and I'm like, okay, score's pretty close here. So then I tuned in and watched the second half, and I'm like, whoa, what's going on here? Like, because they just ran away. It was the second worst margin of defeat in UCLA program history. Like, Mick Cronin, dude, like, come on, figure it out.
And I mean, the interesting thing from my vantage point was, even though the game was close for a good chunk of it,
yeah,
it never was really that close.
Sure. And
Utah always had a handle on that game.
Sure. Utah had them like at an arm's length through that first half. But in the second half, it was like a Ferrari pulling away from a Pinto.
They definitely turned on the afterburners. They got hot with the threes. They really, really pulled away with that one. It was pretty impressive. You could kind of tell, I think, they were playing a little bit angry and taking some things out that happened against the Arizona schools the week before on poor UCLA. Well,
and that's why I wanted to ask you about it, because it feels like to me, they were getting some of the frustration out, and obviously they're going to head to Stanford tomorrow. And Stanford's an interesting team because they scored 100 points on Arizona, speaking of the Cardinal, but they also don't, like, defend.
Yeah.
It's kind of a weird – we'll see what happens on tomorrow. But do you feel like is this Utah men's basketball team, are they more of what they showed against the Arizona schools, or are they capable of doing what they did against UCLA, Michelle?
I think the UCLA game is more in line with what they are.
Okay.
You look at their wins and the people that they've competed against, and yes, they've lost some other games outside of Arizona or the Arizona schools, but those have been very good teams that they've lost to, and they're continuing to still go on and win. Those losses were also, I think, closer than what they encountered with the Arizona schools. Those kind of got away from them. And I don't know if it's – I mean, Utah really has a pretty interesting history on the road in Arizona. I don't know what it is, but both of those schools on the road, for whatever reason, have always and forever given Utah fits. And I just don't know if there wasn't even a psychological element there, that it's like, we know that this round of games has always been a problem and we don't want it to be a problem. And they just came out a little bit stiff and they didn't do what they normally do.
Well, the funny thing was, I think back on it, so what Utah did to UCLA was kind of what Arizona did to them on Saturday, Saturday before, because the first half was really tight. Utah was hanging in there, and Arizona felt like they had control, like similar to Utah on third. Like, they had control in the first half, but the road team is hanging in there. So in this case, Utah at Arizona and then UCLA at Utah. But in the second half, it was like, that was cute. What we're going to do now is it's over. Like, we're just going to run away from you, and this ain't going to be close. And I am interested to see, how Utah, if they can handle going on the road now, learn your lessons, obviously, from that Arizona trip. Can you go to Stanford tomorrow and win this game? Now, Stanford, they are who they are. I do think Utah should win that one, but I am interested, as you kind of mentioned, like, the road for Utah has been an interesting place.
And I mean, that's kind of the Pac-12 in general. Road wins are just hard to get. for anyone. As we saw, you know, Arizona tripped up on the road at Stanford, and Stanford's a pretty average team.
Sure.
Especially by comparison to what Arizona is capable of doing. And yet, that was like a, 25-point or 40-point, I forget how, I mean, it was a sizable win for Stanford.
Yes.
Which you would not think. You would think if they won, they just barely snuck it out. No, that was kind of a beatdown. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see if Utah has a better handle of this one after kind of messing up on the road in Arizona.
Now, BYU is trying to get off the schneid today. They are in Orlando, Florida. They're taking on UCF. You can make a Book of Mormon reference if you want to there. But nonetheless, they leave it to me to bring that one up. But
I actually have seen that movie.
Have you?
I have seen that one. I don't remember it, but I've seen it.
Okay, there you go.
So there you go. There's one I have seen.
All right. So they are in action today. It's a 2 o'clock tip. So it's actually a mid-afternoon tip for BYU. Now, speaking of BYU, the road for them has not been fun. They are still 0-4 in the Big 12. They're 0-4 on the road this season. And Jay Drew pointed this out in the Deseret News. BYU's losing streak on the road extends back 7 games back to last season. Like, they have not had a lot of success on the road. Now, UCF, on paper, they are the only team that was picked to finish worse in the Big 12 this year than BYU. But Wednesday night, little do you know that number 3 Kansas goes to Orlando themselves. UCF forces 18 turnovers and grinds out a 65-60 win over Kansas. Court storming. The Orlando Sentinel calls it the biggest win in UCF basketball history, and I'd have a hard time disagreeing because it's a pretty young school, relatively. I am interested to see how BYU handles this. And by the way, the other thing about this UCF, okay, you're coming off like the high of highs.
Yeah.
Can you keep that level of play there? That's a big question mark.
Yeah, there's a couple of things I think you look at, right? Like, BYU obviously has lost a couple of games now when they've kind of been cruising for the most part this season. Is that in their head, or does it motivate them? So that's one thing you kind of look at. And then, yes, on the UCF side of things, you know, do you use that win to motivate you and propel you forward, or do you let that get in your head and you get ahead of yourselves and you overlook someone that's more than capable of handling you?
Well, the biggest thing for BYU in this game, this happened at Utah, this happened at Baylor, is the turnover issues. Remember last year, the whole storyline of BYU season was they could not take care of the basketball. We're talking routinely 15, 16, 17, 18 turnovers in a game. When you do that, you're giving free points away. Baylor Tuesday night, it was 14 turnovers. Baylor had 18 points off of those turnovers. Utah, I'm sure the numbers are somewhere in that realm. I have to look them up again. This UCF team, they're not that good offensively. They shoot 32% from the field three-point-wise. Like, this is not a high-flying offense that Johnny Dawkins has got there in Orlando. But what they do is they turn you over. They average 16.7 turnovers forced per game. Like, they are among the nation's leaders. And BYU's penchant for turning it over, if they don't clean that up, this could go exactly the same way all the other road games have gone this year. Now, there's only two of them, but they could lose another road game and then be off to an 0-3 start in the Big 12 and suddenly find themselves thinking, ooh, could the bottom really fall out on us all of a sudden after a 12-1 start? I know it's early to say that,
yeah,
but
I mean, it's sometimes just really hard to predict how these teams will respond, especially you know, when you have been faced with some adversity that you did not experience early on, you know, it can be a very make or break type situation. And while it sounds hyperbolic, I think it's a very real possibility for this BYU team. If they don't figure out how to use that slide as their power rather than a continued kryptonite, if that makes sense.
Well, and the crazy thing about this BYU team is they shoot the three at an extremely high level. They actually lead the nation still in three-point field goals made. Like, of all 362 Division I teams, the most three-pointers made by a single team resides in Provo, Utah right now. Get back to doing that. Get back to sharing the basketball. The thing about it is Cincinnati, when they lost to Cincinnati, the final 10 minutes were an absolute bleep show. Just BYU fell apart. They put a guy who had made 9 three-pointers on the bench for almost 6 minutes of game time and didn't, like, And the excuse from Mark Pope afterwards was, we were keeping with rotations. 6 minutes of rotation? No.
He wasn't in foul trouble like that.
Trevin Nell had made 9 of 13 three-pointers, Michelle.
What you doing,
he
baby?
He had 27 points. He was absolutely rocking and rolling. The 10-minute and 23-second mark, they were down by one to Cincinnati. He sat until the 4-minute and 20-some-odd minute mark. And in that time, Cincinnati mounted, I think it was a 15-2 run, and that put the game to bed.
Remember how we talked earlier in the show uh-huh. about Will Hardy being flexible and that's cutting your nose to spite your face if that's the reasoning you're giving.
And to double down on it, they didn't bring any players out after the game to speak to the media. It was a pretty weak move. Mark Pope spoke for 5 minutes. I think we got a grand total of 5 questions in. It wasn't pretty, but nonetheless, get back to doing what you're doing, because after that Cincinnati game, it felt like that was a game where they kind of got all kind of caught up in the moment. They were all, we had guys shooting 40-footers that you're like, okay, why are you taking that shot in that circumstance? Like, just forcing it. Against Baylor, they started to share the ball a little bit more, and there were times it still got stuck a little bit. I want to see BYU get back to doing what they've been doing most of the year, and that is sharing the basketball, moving it, and finding open shots for their teammates, because when they've done that, they've been very, very good. It feels like Big 12 play kind of has gotten them caught a little bit. Like, pressure mounted. Like, they need to relax a little bit here.
Right.
And I think it's a similar circumstance to Utah here going on the road. Understand, okay, yeah, you're playing in a hostile venue. We get all that. Mm-hmm. But go play your basketball. Play your style.
Yeah. Yeah. Go do what you've been doing. In a way, like, you went across the country and played some of the best teams, and you did a better job handling that than you did just down the street.
Sure.
Just relax. Just relax, breathe. It's not that deep. Just go do your thing.
Yeah. By the way, gave you a quick shout out. We had to break here. Utah State, those guys are doing something
they're balling.
Cool. Yeah. They're 15-1. They upset Colorado State the other night. They're ranked 20th in the country here. And to consider they had like 0 points and 0 rebounds, like this team, you want to talk about building a team on the fly? That's what Danny Sprinkle has done. It's pretty incredible stuff what they're doing up there in Logan. So keep an eye on them as well. And got some good basketball here locally. It's fun. Like, a lot of good teams. The hope is that they can kind of get themselves back to doing what they've been doing early on this season. All right. So coming up next, we'll get to 5 minutes of. We will talk about what's going on in college football. Some crazy news this week. I never thought it would happen. Nick Saban has stepped down. They've already hired his replacement. It's a name many of you are familiar with. And DeBoer. What's his first name?
Kalen DeBoer.
I want to say Kevin DeBoer. That's
not
wrong.
Right.
Yeah, Kalen DeBoer.
It's close, but it's not right.
Already been hired as his replacement. We'll talk about all that next, right here on the Saturday Show. To the Saturday Show. Michelle, this is also from Guardians of the Galaxy, by the way.
I think this is Crystal Lisa's beam routine last year.
It is, you're right. But this is also from that. By the way, our good friend Clint O'Pete sent this in. He's like, one day Vodka and KSL Sports will see Guardians of the Galaxy and be like, oh, that's where all those memes and GIFs come from.
I mean, I've seen them and I know where they come from. I just haven't watched the movie.
Yeah.
I have heard that actually I've actually listened to the soundtrack. I have not seen the movie, and the soundtrack is bomb.
Yeah, that first movie in particular.
Some good oldies. This song, Fire. The last song, Fire. So good.
They did a really good job with that. All right, let's get to some of the topics we have not had a chance to touch on quite yet. Let's start on the college football universe. Trust me, when I first saw this news come down, I'm like, this is a joke. Who's got a clown account that's doing this? Nick Saban is resigning. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Like, he and 72 years old, and as some people like to call him, Nicky Satan, he's out.
He's out. He's done. You know, I think the first clue that was going down was his defensive coordinator, actually.
Kevin Still.
Stepped down. And Kevin, ironically enough, is someone that I've met and talked to in person before. Actually, with Mike Norvell, believe it or not.
Right.
It was quite the meeting. A Senior Bowl meeting, actually. Meeting of the minds. But I think that was kind of clue number, like looking back on it, clue number one, because Kevin Still and Nick Saban go way, way back. Mm-hmm. Kevin has some amazing stories about Nick Saban. And yeah, and Nick followed behind shortly thereafter. And it's one of those things that kind of makes sense, but it kind of blows your mind too, because it just feels like he's been here forever and been the standard of college football and the kind of model that everybody else has tried to also achieve and replicate. So to have him not be a part of it, it's going to be kind of different.
Well, it is. And that's the thing about it is this is a guy who he's the GOAT. Like, mm-hmm. there, you look at every metric you could measure coaches against. Like, it's like, no, he owns that one. He owns that. He never had a losing season in all of his head coaching career. Toledo, Michigan State, LSU, NFL aside, but in college,
yeah,
never. The worst he ever did was I think 500 seasons with Michigan State. Like,
I mean, okay, if you want to like split hairs, he sort of had a losing season his first season at Alabama when they took away some of the wins
sure.
for cheating.
Yeah.
But if you don't take those, it was a 7-6 season. So
yeah. 6 national championships in 17 years at Alabama. That's just over a shade over averaging 1 every 3 seasons. Like, incredible stuff there. He also did win the national title at LSU. He's got 7 natties under his belt. It's not out of the realm to say that was earth-shattering news in the college football universe, mm-hmm. because that just, it changes everything.
It does change everything. And aside from coaches now moving around yeah. and shuffling around, there's this new interesting thing where the transfer portal opens up for Alabama mm-hmm. and Washington and who knows who else, because Washington hires away some, like, so it's a whole chain and ripple effect through college football that really is going to change up and shake up some things.
Yeah, they've already hired his replacement. Kalen DeBoer is leaving Washington after leading them to the national championship game. He is taking over at Alabama, and with that guy's track record, who thinks it's going to slow down anytime soon for Alabama? Is he 104-19 and as a head coach or some crazy number?
Something crazy like
and
that.
And DeBoer has worked his way up from literally the bottom. He worked at Sioux Falls in the NAIA. He's worked at the FCS. He's worked at the G5. He's worked at the Power 5. He has worked his way up that ladder. This is, a lot of people say you don't want to be the guy that replaces the guy. And yes, it'll be interesting to see how he handles mm-hmm. the post-Saban era at Alabama. But in terms of people who have just found ways to have success no matter what, I think you could do a lot worse than having hired DeBoer as your replacement for Nick.
Oh, totally. I think Kalen DeBoer is a really good coach. I think the actually more interesting thing to watch is the NIL thing, though, because there has been some speculation that while Alabama does well in NIL, they don't have quite the deep pockets that some of the others do.
Correct.
And so, you know, does that put a cap on the success that we've seen Alabama typically have, because they're now in a position where they can't compete with others the way that they used to, because they kind of monopolized
correct
that whole situation before it was legal. We'll just put it that way. The stories are out there.
Well, and they also said
follow the poker chips.
They also
it's
said
fine.
That NIL, their NIL thing, it was all built around kind of like Saban. Mm-hmm. Like, it was like taking him for granted. Like, Saban's the guy. And he gave like zero indications of what was happening. He was interviewing defensive coordinator candidates the same day.
Yeah.
He decided, you know what? I'm out. I got to give him props, by the way. This is like the John Stockton thing. I don't want like a run through a schedule where everybody can celebrate me. Random Wednesday afternoon, hey, team meeting, guys, I'm retiring. I'll help with the transition, but thanks, and I'll see you down the road.
Adios. Well, maybe catch you on college game day, where I'll likely be a host or something.
He's going to replace Lee Corso.
That's so funny, because my parents and I were talking about that last night, and that was our speculation, too.
It seems too natural, lovely and everything, and he's been great for that program. He's getting up there.
He is.
And Saban seems like a really natural guy to step into that role. Yes, is he going to be as eccentric as Lee Corso was?
No. Well, and here's the thing. I think you have Lee Corso step down. The headgear thing goes away at college game day.
Oh, come on. I want Nick to put on headgear. I'd die.
I just don't think you – I mean, even if his replacement is not Nick Saban, like, you can't have someone else do that.
It won't be the same. I expect to keep it going, though. I do think they will keep it going.
So do they have Pat McAfee do it? Because that's the only person I think would be appropriate to have do that.
We'll see if Pat sticks around for any significant period of time with ESPN.
Also that, but, you know, whatever, whatever.
Pat's, by the way, Pat is awesome, but apparently he is, like, him and ESPN are just button heads at every turn all of a sudden.
He grew on me a little bit. I found myself liking him more than I thought I would, but he's still kind of a tough pill for me to swallow, to be honest.
The thing is, I think he's going to keep going is because ESPN needs him a heck of a lot more than he needs ESPN.
Oh, completely and totally. They got rid of all their people that were notable outside of him and, like, Holly Rowe and Kirk Herbstreit.
To make room for him, yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Just crazy.
Nuts. Real quick, other local note real quick I want to get to. Real Salt Lake has sent Jefferson Savarino to, is it Botafogo? Did I get that right, Alex? You can correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, that's correct.
He's going back to Brazil. So he was with RSL. They sent him to Brazil. He won a ton of trophies there in Brazil. Came back. He's had a pretty good run with RSL a second time, but they are sending him right back to Brazil, which I assume is a move that he has welcomed and everything. I think both sides are happy with this. RSL preseason starts Monday. So,
oh my gosh, that is just crazy.
I knew you were going to react like that.
It never ceases to shock me how, like, quick their off season is. It goes by so fast. They are basically a nonstop sport.
You want me to double blow your mind?
Please do.
RSL season starts next month.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, I always forget this, and then I remember it every year, and it's like, yeah, this is kind of absurd, but
they open up at Miami against Messi, and who else does Messi have around him now? Like,
Luis Suarez.
Oh, Luis Suarez, that's who they just signed, yes.
Yeah.
Mr. Old, bite everybody that he plays against, is back in MLS.
Mm. Hey, but how awesome is it going to be when Luis Suarez comes into this league, makes it MLS Cup, and bites someone in MLS Cup final?
Please. Please.
Picture perfect ending for Luis Suarez.
Please. Please. And he's proverbial on his last legs because, like, dude is breaking down left and right. But he just fights into somebody
good
again.
Hannibal Lecter.
Oh, Luis Suarez. He's one of those, you know what I'm saying, like a competitor? I'll give Luis Suarez this. That dude competes. Does he cross the line with it? Abso-freaking-lutely. He bites people. That dude,
I totally forgot about that. And that was a very shocking storyline when that happened.
Him and Messi are in Miami together, so should be fun. I just don't want him to come to Salt Lake. I want to see Messi at Rio Tinto Stadium. That's all I want.
Maybe if there's another deep run in Open Cup
or
Leagues Cup, it may happen. But as of right now, RSL heading to Miami to open the season.
Yeah, so it should be fun there. Also, last night, the Utah Royals had the NWSL draft, and seven players drafted, correct?
Yes.
They had 9 picks in the draft. They traded 2 of them away amidst it. But they did bring in 2 former BYU players. Brecken Mozingo was their 4th overall selection, and Olivia Smith Griffiths, she was in the second round, I believe.
Second or third
round. Yes. This Royals roster, and I'll give Carly Nelson had a really, really funny tweet. Did you see this, by the way?
I did. I retweeted it.
Carly Nelson played at Timpanogos High School, and then she ended up playing at Utah.
Okay.
She said, "Did I get transferred to the Royals or BYU?"
Oh, that's great.
She was having some.
We love some good rivalry humor.
Because they had Michaela Clough already on the roster. They also have Michelle Vasconcelos, also on the former BYU soccer players. You draft Mozingo. You draft Olivia Smith Griffiths. I believe Olivia Wade Katoa was in contention for the Royals to take, but she ends up getting taken by Portland. There's going to be a strong local representation on this Royals roster, which is it needs to happen.
We love that.
Take advantage of that. But I also like the fact that they haven't gone all in on just saying, hey, we're building around the local. Like, they've actually gone out and gotten some really good players. Their top overall selection was from North Carolina, if I recall correctly.
Yes, Ali Centaur.
Yeah, and she's a fantastic player in her own right. So
it'll be fun.
We'll see.
That'll be fun to watch. It's good to have them back.
It is good to have them back. I do have a concern that this first year people are going to be like, why are they struggling? They're an expansion franchise. Let's give them a little bit of a runway here, y'all. Like,
need some breathing room to work out some of the kinks.
Yeah, but Amy Rodriguez is doing a good job, I think, putting together this roster. So we'll see what happens. All right, we will take a timeout here. We'll come back on the other side. Get some final thoughts on today's program. This is the Saturday Show right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Welcome back to the Saturday Show. Hope you all are doing well on this Saturday morning. Great question here, by the way, you sent it to me. Ryan Van Wagenen is a dear friend of the station. Loves listening to the shows and everything. He sends me this question. He says, Jake, will Dallin Hall have more assists or turnovers today? If you pick the right answer, maybe I'll invite you to golf again this summer. Now, this is high stakes.
Oh.
Because Ryan's got connections to golf courses I can only dream of getting on.
Well, sir, you better guess right.
I'm going to say more assists than turnovers. Now, Dallin Hall has been in a little bit of a slump, but the slump has been more on his shooting and his shot selection. Like, I talked about that 40-footer that was thrown up against Cincinnati, kind of just like, what? Where did that come from? Yeah, it was Dallin Hall. Like, it was like, just, like, you're the point guard, dude. Facilitate here. We need to clean this up a little bit here, but we'll see. I do think, Ryan, to answer your question, I do think that he will have more assists than turnovers. And please invite me to go golf with you again.
Even if he guesses wrong, please let him come.
Well, they need him to have more assists than turnovers if they want to win today. Real quick, ending where we started, Michelle. Tim McComber tweeted this, but this is crazy. So over the last 15 games for the Utah Jazz, mm-hmm. So they're 10-2 in their last 12. They're 12-3 in their last 15 here. So does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So in these last 15 games, the Jazz have the second most wins in the NBA. They have the 10th best offensive rating, which their offensive rating has been in the bottom third of the league for most of the season. They have the 10th best defensive rating. So now they're in top 10, both offensively and defensively. That's a big reason why they're winning as much as they are. They have a top 5 assist percentage as a team right now. So they're sharing the basketball. And then they have the best rebound percentage as well. Well, that'll tell you a lot of why they've gone from what I say was 10-18 December 21st, and then on January 13th they're 20-20.
Zero to hero, just like that.
Yep,
there you go. To quote a movie.
Look at you. Hey, Michelle has some pop.
I know some things. I'm actually a little shocked and amazed that I've been throwing out Disney stuff.
Disney references.
Disney is not my jam at all.
I'm married to the Disney reference in my household. My wife, she can pull Disney quotes like that. It's insane, because she'll quote them and be like, what's that from? And I'm like, I'm guessing Disney, because that's where all her frame of reference seems to come from with all the movies she goes with. But nonetheless, crazy stuff. But yeah, so that tells you kind of in a nutshell, like, okay, you move into top 10 both offensively and defensively, you're rebounding the basketball at a high level, and oh, by the way, you're sharing the basketball. Hey,
that's a recipe to win.
It's a pretty simple recipe. Now, it's much easier said than done, because we sit here on the radio and we talk about it. It's like those guys are actually out there doing it. Now, I do wonder tonight, the Lakers, they win that in-season tournament and it feels like they've like just hit the skids since then.
Mm-hmm.
Now, on any given night, LeBron James can shoot his team into any game. He can single-handedly win games, even at 39 years old, which have you seen LeBron much this year, Michelle?
Mm-mm.
Insanity. He is just 21st year in the league, and he's doing things that he did when he was 18 years old.
You know, that's my goal.
Our goal.
It's my goal. Like, I am hellbound and determined. I am going to rock the fountain of youth, and I'm going to be young forever. That is just what it's going to be.
Well, we'll see. It will bear watching to see what the Jazz do, because like this Lakers team, they're very star-laden, as they always are. Him and Anthony Davis are great. We had Brian Geltzeiler on earlier this week, and the thing about it is Brian Geltzeiler said that the Jazz need to dump Hillbilly Kobe. Why am I forgetting his name all of a sudden? Austin Reeves. He said
Hillbilly.
That was his nickname coming out of college, Michelle.
That's incredible.
Hillbilly Kobe. He went to Wichita State. It fits perfectly. Do you not know this? Do you not know his nickname?
No, I've never heard that. Oh. That's awesome.
Hillbilly Kobe was his nickname coming out of Wichita State. So, good times. But nonetheless, crazy, crazy stuff. But we'll see. It's 6:30 pregame on that. It'll be a 7:30 tip at the Delta Center. Looking forward to it. You can tune into that here on the KSL Sports Zone. Coming up 12:30, we got a pregame for Utah State. Is it 12:30, right? Okay, and then so 1 o'clock tip, Utah State in action at UNLV, so down there in Sin City. Scotty G will be on the call for that. I do wonder how Utah State handles this one at UNLV, because the Rebels, they're interesting. And obviously you're playing on the road here. Early afternoon game, it can screw up guys' schedules because they're so used to, like, basketball players used to play at night.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm same thing I'm wondering with BYU today is, okay, it's 4 o'clock there on the East Coast, but that's still earlier than you guys ever tip off so far this season for the most part. So we'll see how these teams handle it, but it will be interesting. But I am curious how these teams handle it, and obviously the Utah women to no.
No. Gymnastics.
Utah gymnastics tonight.
Yeah.
And this is the Sprouts Collegiate Quad tonight.
Mm-hmm. Yep. At 2 p.m.
Okay, and so they're playing some, like, they're taking on some really, really good squads in this, aren't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, so this is the best of, some of the best of the best in all of college gymnastics. Obviously, you have number 2 Utah, you have number 1 Oklahoma, LSU's like number 4 or 5, I think, and then UCLA dropped down to, I believe, 12. But, jeez. I mean, still...
So all top 15.
All great teams.
Yeah.
You know, these are teams that come with it. They're some of the best, most entertaining teams in the country. And so it should be a good showdown at the Maverick Center. Or mm-hmm. if you can't be there, check it out on ABC. They're getting a primetime slot. So that's pretty incredible.
It's pretty awesome. And then the Monday, they're right back at it, right? Best, mm-hmm. best of Utah?
Best of Utah. That's less competitive.
Okay.
Well, but, to put it nicely. But hey,
sure.
you know, whatever.
Okay, but here's the thing with gymnastics. Do they need more time off than 24 hours, really, between meets? Or is that a concern? We're over time here, but I just thought about that. I'm like,
you know, I think the idea for Utah scheduling this uh-huh. was to prepare for postseason, which the turnaround is quite a bit like that.
Okay.
It's all on podium. So it's kind of replicating what they should see. Knock on wood, everything goes correctly later on in postseason.
Okay, well. There you go. Any final thoughts?
Just tune in to all the sporty balls.
Yep.
They're all happening today.
And read Michelle at KSLSports.com.
Oh,
look at that. Real quick. All right. For Alex, for Michelle, I'm Jake. Have a great rest of your Saturday, everybody. Utah State coverage starts at 12:30 right here on the KSL Sports Zone. See ya.